Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Lana Turner talks about moving on.
The last few years of my marriage were riddled with addiction and a lot of problems, and I was not treated well, and I got used to not being treated well. So the idea of somebody treating me with kindness and love and respect was extremely foreign. So getting back into the dating world was very, very scary. Tried to date a few people, notably, I dated an older dude, which came with the trifecta of finishing too fast, not getting hard, and passing out and falling asleep, which was really something I never really knew much about. I mean, that was like all new territory. I was like, is this what dating's about now?
Today on the show, comedian Lana Turner talks about moving on and her new documentary, What's Eating Ralphie May? Stay close.
Hey, my name is Lana Turner, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to the episode last week with Laura House. Laura House is a comedian, and I've known her for like 20 years, Lana. And she told, and here's something I never knew about her. She was adopted, and that was her story. It was about how she found her birth mother. So it was really good. And it was part 23andMe and part finding her half-brother. And it was a really well-told story. And it was really a journey because she started looking for her when she was about 18 and didn't find her till she was like 40. So,
Yeah, it's really,
it's a great story. So go back, you guys, listen to Laura House from last week, but not today, because today I'm here with one of the sweetest girls I ever met. She's been on the show before. She's super talented. She's a guitar player, a musician, and most and foremost, a comedian. Lana Turner is here, and she's just so fun to watch and to listen to. Her YouTube channel blows my mind. Lana, your YouTube channel is well done.
Oh my gosh, thank you. I you're just making me feel so good right now.
Well, you put so much content out, dude.
I'm trying, right? Right now especially, it's trying to keep busy and be creative and make people laugh from not from a stage, you know. It's been challenging, but I love putting stuff up and I love the reactions. So
thank you so much. You're an artist. You want your stuff appreciated. That makes sense, right?
Aww. Yeah. No, you're so sweet. Thank you.
The video that you just put out, is it called No Fucking Way or what's it called?
Oh.
The mask one.
Yeah. It's So Happy is what I called it.
Oh.
So, and then but it's easy to say the fucking happy because that's like every line in
I was thinking, if I'm so off, maybe I watched the wrong thing.
No, you're right. The funny thing about that is that I made two versions of the video. I made one with no cursing at all, and it played in a online Zoom conference for a corporation. And that's, but... And they liked it because there was no F-bombs. And in the real version, every other word is an F-bomb because I think everyone's just like, fuck this mask thing. I mean, I obviously, like, I'm a big supporter of mask wearing. Like, you have to wear a mask, but it still fucking sucks.
Yes.
So, and there's no better way to put it in my mind than this fucking sucks.
Yeah.
But I did make a version with no F-words, which is funny.
It's really adorable. And the videos you make are so, they're short. They're really sweet. You're in them. Your guitar is in them. And then how do you choose the locations? Because like this last one, it looks like you're on a mountaintop somewhere. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe just a plateau where you're hiking or something.
Yeah, there's an overlook not far from my house here. We were just looking for places that we could shoot stuff that was recognizable and you know, around Hollywood. Because everything was so dead. It still is.
Right.
It's just weird.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. And you've had such a crazy life in general over the last 20 years. I mean, you've been on such a journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, your topic today is moving on with Lana Turner, moving on. So we're talking about what you're doing now and, you know, your videos and your life as a comedian. But we can't ignore your documentary coming out, which is coming out in 2021, right?
Yeah, we don't have the release date yet, but it's in post.
Getting contracts. It's done. Yeah.
And getting, yeah, it's been to a couple of film festivals and gotten stellar reviews. It's super sad, the film, but it's a really important film. It's like in comedy, there's a lot of biopics of comedians who have passed away and that you hear their story from other people. This story was actually told from Ralphie himself and the woman who filmed him.
Right. So the name of the film is What's Eating Ralphie May, and it's all about your husband who passed away 3 years ago, right? 2017?
Yeah. You know, it was supposed to be all about him. When we turned the camera on, it was supposed to be a weight loss documentary, and there wasn't supposed to be a whole lot about me or our
family
kids in the film, or even any of the external people. It was really just supposed to be this man that, you know, got healthy, like every other, you want to watch these projects where the fat person gets thin, and that was the intention. And a good documentary doesn't end where you want it to, and this one absolutely doesn't end anywhere near where we wanted it to, obviously. And it's sad. We all know how it ends, but the journey to get there is fascinating because, I mean, you just, comics we're a tough, messed up group of people, and Ralphie shared some of his pain on camera.
Yeah.
You can really see his struggles. And my struggles too, because he was an addict,
right?
And I was I am a codependent, very much so. And to watch myself, how I was in that time of my life is a hard thing to see. But
well,
important
it's
to share.
So brave that you're willing to say, you know, this was my role in it, because, you know, you were there. And so, you know, you're coming out with a lot of honesty about yourself. And I mean, I watched the trailer and it's beautiful. I mean, the trailer gives you shivers. The trailer like almost makes you cry because it shouldn't have ended like this. And it's so funny. In one part of the trailer, you're in a car and they show you just talking, you know, you're driving in the car and you say, yeah, it's not a big deal. I'll just make sure he loses 2.5 pounds a week. And that's it. That's what we'll do. It won't be hard. And that could be true for other people, but it wasn't true for him because it wasn't just about the weight. It was about drugs. It was about, I don't know, isolation on the road or getting yes people around you.
Yeah, a lot. Well, addiction is really, really complicated, you know, and food addiction is a really hard one to understand. I still have a hard time understanding it. But when a wise man told me many years ago that addictions change over time, so he wasn't just addicted to food at the end of his life. He was addicted to a variety of things. And the food is one thing. I mean, it definitely created sneaking around and a lot of problems, but the pills changed his personality and made a different person out of him because he was a sweet, sweet man.
So sweet. I've met him before. So sweet. Like, just like the most gentle soul. You know who else was like that? Was Brody Stevens.
Yes.
So gentle, so kind, you know? Yeah, so isn't that so
sweet,
interesting
sweet
that somebody that has that truth in them about how they really are, and then somehow they get overtaken by, like you said, the drugs or pills, or you can't combat that. Like you can't fight that.
Yeah, I mean, Ralphie truly had everything in the world at his fingertips. I mean, he had career success, financial success. I loved him dearly. He had two beautiful kids. I mean, and it was nothing could compete with that. And even the people who were willing to associate him to his addictions, like the people who supported the addictions, became more important than the most important things in the world, like the kids and stuff. And
that sucks.
Those people to this day, they come up with these crazy things that they've said that I kept him from the kids. Like, I never did that. Like, he was very, very ill and it was really tough, you know, but like people make choices, and I do know that there are people who do overcome. So I hope that this film helps people they do see it.
It will.
That they.
But those people that enabled him, as it were, I mean, are they still, have they gone away, as it were?
Yes and no. Most of them. I mean, I anticipate some of them to come back when the film comes back up. But there was a couple of people that pulled some stuff, like, not that long ago. This was one of the stories I was going to tell on the podcast, which is some people bought, so when Ralphie passed away, his mother wanted to get him take care of all the things that dealt with his burial and the gravesite and everything. And I love his mother. I'm really close to his mother and have been. In fact, when Ralphie and I separated, she stayed friendly with me and they didn't talk. So, because she didn't like what he was doing and how he was behaving from the drugs. And she's just a wonderful woman. So she wanted to get his headstone, and she gave some money to his brother, and Ralphie's brother has had some health issues, and he took some time to get the headstone. And it was about a year out when I just took over, and I said to the brother, I said, just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And I bought a headstone. And then these people went ahead and illegally placed a felonious headstone on his grave a few weeks before my headstone had arrived. And then they got on Joey Diaz's podcast and talked about me like I'm a terrible person and said that I told Ralphie to kill himself and like all kinds of crazy stuff. None of it is true. So I was pretty devastated, Christine.
That makes me sick to my stomach. I knew you when Ralphie was alive. You were never had a bad word to say about him. You only had compassion for him. You only made your kids available to him. He was in Tennessee, right?
Yeah, but yeah.
Okay,
we
just
had a house there
because there was traveling involved, and I just remember how concerned you were and how much you wanted the situation to be calmer in a familial way for your family.
1,000%, like you know, and so there was a lot of things at play. Like, and Ralphie even agreed towards the end. Like, I didn't mind him. He had carte blanche for over a year to come see the kids anytime he wanted. And I was willing to send the kids to him over
that.
The holidays. But they had to be with somebody to help monitor because everybody who knew Ralphie at that time knew that he would just pass out. Like, and the kids were really young. So, and then just physically at his size. And I'm not saying any of this to be mean to Ralphie. Like, he just was
obviously
very heavy and he was on some heavy narcotics. And so logically, you know that that doesn't make for a good combination for being around young children.
Right. And you don't know who he's around, which...
Well, I did know. He had a girlfriend for a little while that got arrested for DUI, paraphernalia, and a loaded handgun in the vehicle.
Oh, God.
So there were people around that I didn't want around my kids.
Yeah, no kidding. Did Joey Diaz shut them down on the show, or did he just let
that
play out? Yeah, see, that sucks.
No.
That's not right.
He went off. And then, like, and so here's the thing. I didn't... Yeah, no, and in fact, I think he helped pay for the headstone. Like, the more the story, you know how they say truth is crazier than fiction?
Right.
Like, it's the craziest thing. Like, who puts a legal headstone on somebody's grave? But I as a comedian, decided to not, so I had an option, right? I called a defamation attorney. I could sue them. Like, I could get ugly. I could, and because there's no truth to anything that they said or did,
sure.
Right? But then that's time out of my life, and
attention.
I really don't want to, deal with that stuff. And the number of people that heard that is exponentially less than the number of people who will see the film. And anybody who believes those stories, you know, it's only a matter of time before they figure out that's not true. But the best part about it, what made me laugh, is that Ralphie never did anything with subtlety, right? He was a big man.
Sure.
He had a big laugh. He had a big heart. And he did everything big. He never bought just one thing. He never spent less than the value.
Right.
Like, he always overspent, like over.
Right.
So the thought that he got three headstones so basically, like, his mother paid for one.
Yeah.
For like, she spent, and she's a saint. She spent like $1,700, right? I paid for a headstone. And then these people who actually did a legal fundraising, so they ran a bunch of shows.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they
so
ran
methodical.
Shows in his. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They ran shows in his name. So they didn't actually buy him a headstone. I don't know where the money came from for it, but I know that they were making.
Yeah.
I don't know because it's not, I don't talk to them.
So is it still there?
Well, the funny thing is I didn't know what to do. Like, I have my headstone that was being delivered a few weeks after they put this.
Yeah.
By the way, a headstone that they put my kids' names on, and they didn't even know my son's name fully. So they like got his name wrong and then put April's full name on there. And it was just they're not his friends. It was a publicity stunt.
Sure.
So I have to put mine on now. And I'm like, the question is, do I remove theirs? And I was like, you know what? We're just going to put both on the grave because the joke is Rafi like went back for seconds, you know.
That's
like, it just
adorable. I think that is so cute. He would like that.
I think it's funny in that way.
And he is going to love the film. It's just beautiful. I mean, and it's a side of Rafi people haven't seen.
So sometimes people will say Rafi didn't want the film to come out, which is also another story that's fun to clear up, because that's a total bullshit lie. Well, those guys said on their podcast, which they know nothing of it, that Rafi didn't want the film to come out, that he didn't like the director, that he didn't, which is not true. She actually went out and filmed him after he and I split up. Like, he had a relationship with her, loved her, and had the hard drives. So the hard drives, apparently, a friend of mine, Steve, who went with me to the house when I went back to Nashville to clean out the house the first time, he had been in my house 3 months prior. And so he knew where things were in the home. And the hard drives, Rafi had his own copy of the film hard drives, and I had my own copy, had been removed from the house after he passed away. A bunch of stuff walked away from the house.
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah, and I had to take his former, I put in quotes, manager, because the guy isn't really a real manager. We had to go to court so I could secure the drives. And he had this elaborate story about how
Unbelievable, Lana. I can't believe you've had to deal with all this on top of you're a mom of two children.
It was crazy.
And your career.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes for a really good book, which is what I've done a lot of during COVID, is write this book that will answer questions that aren't answered in the film. But yeah, I mean, the film, Rafi wanted it made. And the cool thing about Rafi was that he was not shy of sharing his personal stuff. And some of it, I would say, were big, elaborate stories, because talk about a good storyteller. I wish you could have had him on your show. He would tell a story that you would be, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And it may or may not be true, but that was what made him so awesome at what he did. But like, he wanted this film because he was an active participant in it. And I know him. I knew him for 20 years almost. And he didn't shy away from showing himself publicly. He wanted to do reality TV all the time. And so, I don't know. I think the director did a great job. And the other thing that's important to note about that film is that I didn't participate in the editing. She had the footage and she saw the story and she edited the film. So that
I saw her picture. She's blonde hair. What's her name?
Kat Reinhart.
Kat Reinhart, wow. I think it's going to be amazing. Like I said, just the trailer, it's so beautiful. It reminded me, even just in the 1 minute that I saw, it reminded me of the film Imagine that came out like in 84, 85, about John Lennon's death. And John Lennon is in the documentary. He's telling the story. You know, it's all John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
Yeah.
It was their film together, and it was so beautiful. Like, that's a film I could rewatch anytime, because it's just a perfect film about his life and with his voice. And this is what you've done as well. You've got Rafi, not you, but this is what Kat has done. She's taken Ralphie's voice and put his voice over his own documentary. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, she caught some super intimate moments, and because we trusted her. She became part of our family during that time, and it was very intimate. And
so who paid her to begin with? Did somebody actually pay her to do this from the get-go?
Yeah, so Rafi always wanted to do reality TV. So he had this man that came into his life. He's like a club owner, and he owns pigs in Tennessee. He's like, he was a nightmare. He came into our lives, and just really caused a lot of problems, and then continued to until the end of Ralphie's life. And then after Ralphie passed away, he's actually the one that I had to go to court with about the taking the hard drives from the house and everything. Yeah. So,
I mean, maybe it should be assumed that there are sleazy people in this industry.
Yeah.
But I don't know that many. I've met one really sleazy guy in the last 23 years.
Lucky.
Do you know what I mean? Like, well, so how many you've met? A lot? Yeah, or
probably more. I don't know. But like, I mean,
so this guy,
I mean, he's not really in the industry. He was trying, and he was collecting income from Ralphie. And I mean, yeah, but I kind of lost my train of thought on where we were going with it.
Well, no, we were just talking about like he wasn't Ralphie's manager, but he was getting like 15%.
Yeah, I think I don't know how like, it really all he really started financially benefiting after he got me out of the way.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty.
And then he continued to be, I mean, does he scam a lot of people? Is he a bad guy in general? Or was he just focused on Ralphie?
He owns a comedy club. Like, he's not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's just a person that came into our lives, and he wanted to open a management company, and Ralphie made enough money to make it viable. And I didn't want any part of it. And that didn't bode well for the relationship. So, you know. There was
it
was really sad.
Well, it is sad, and you've had to go through so much, and it just seems to never end. But now at least the documentary is coming out, and that's got to like solidify a lot.
Well, and I have to say there's karma involved in everything in life. So there is a scene in the film where that manager guy is in my house, and he's like Harvey Weinstein. People hate him. Like at the end of the screenings, people were like, "What? Who is that? Like, what is that person?" He said to me in this that Ralphie needed to not. He basically was like, "Ralphie doesn't need to spend time with his family. He needs to sleep. You're the one that needs to take care of your kids. And if you have a problem with that, then you don't. Then like, he earns the money, and women don't. And women need to do more work and stay with the kids." And
what
it's just like a cringeworthy moment, and it's. You know, I mean, I just think the karma that people have in this world, it comes back. Like,
yeah, and I think so too. And he's probably a very unhappy person in his life. He probably doesn't have a partner. He's probably lonely.
I don't care. It's like,
I know, but I'm just saying that that's where his ugliness comes out. So he's just an ugly person. It's just, you know, somebody you don't want in your life. But
yeah,
unfortunately.
No, and addiction brings a lot of negativity. So, like, when I talk about karma, like, I went through a lot, and I feel like my karma during that time like was affected because I was doing the wrong things. I was taking care of, I was involved in an addiction cycle that wasn't healthy. I wasn't taking care of myself. I was not putting myself in a good place. And so therefore like it opened up a door to a lot of things. But once I was able to get away from that, it really stopped. And no, I don't want to say away from Ralphie, because Ralphie was part of, he was sick. And I think I was sick as well. And you can see that in the film.
Yeah, but Lana, how would you have had the tools to deal with this? I mean, you wouldn't have had any, you would never have known how to deal with this. You did what you could. You did the best you could.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I think the message, so I would never have been able to hear myself tell myself these words a few years ago, which is, you need to take care of yourself. You can't save another person. If somebody is addicted to pills, you can't win. Like there's a conversation that when you're in the middle of it, you don't want to believe that. You just love that person so much. You're willing to do anything and fight any battle to try and get them sober and get them around, especially when you have children and a life together that you remember, you know, you remember all those good times. And that's when I look at myself in the film and I'm like, I want to shake myself and be like, get out of there. You can leave. But I never would have left him. And I didn't leave him. He actually was the one that left me, which was a bummer. But
I know. It was actually you never Right. Right, because you could move ahead, and at least the kids were, you were providing a good life for the kids, and they were healthy and happy with you. It wasn't like a daily struggle, but it's still something you had to endure. And now you have truly come out the other side, because the kids are thriving, right?
Yeah, they're doing so good.
Yeah, they're homeschooling.
I mean, okay, so I always have to say, like, I still have my father. I still have my mother. Like, I talk to my parents often, sometimes a couple times a week. Like, I love them so much. And I don't know what it's like to lose your father like that. I mean, I feel so much for them and what they've been through, but they are phenomenal humans.
That's so exciting. Yeah, I love that so much. I'm so glad. And the documentary is truly beautiful, and I'm really glad you guys got it put together. I know Drew Pinsky and his wife are producers on the show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're good people, and Drew always has a good heart. And so I know he would not get involved in a project that was anything less than great.
Yes.
So I think it's going to be phenomenal. I can't wait to watch it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really proud of you. I'm proud of you for all you've had to get through. But now you are moving on, and I'm so thrilled about that. And boy, it's easy to go down a rabbit hole, isn't it, though, to talking about, you know, it's just because your life, it's interesting. Your life is very interesting.
Well, I have a lot of stories, so.
You sure do. Yeah. And you have so many of your own incredible talents. And so let's get to your story. But before we do, I did want to remind people to head over to storyworthypodcast.com to check out what is happening with my Zoom shows. So I don't know if you knew this, Lana, but I've been doing shows every Sunday night for 26 weeks in a row on, on Zoom. And I'm going to take 2 weeks off, but we're moving the game show because we've been playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show, after the Hour of Power every week. But we're going to shift that, and the Story Smash, the game show, is moving on to Friday night. So starting December 4th, Story Smash will be live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and I've got a whole new platform coming out for the game. So it's going to be really fun, and you guys will be able to see all of your favorite comedians like Danny Zucker and Blanka Patch. And Lana, I hope you come back and play.
Oh my God, I love that. It's
Lana,
so much fun.
Okay, I don't know if you guys remember this, but a couple years ago, Lana was on the show at the Improv, you know, the Story Smash at the Improv. And the three panelists were Danny Zucker, Wendy McClendon Covey, and Larry King.
Uh-huh.
And Lana was wearing a cute little outfit. It was like a little dress that you would call, it's not a teddy, but it kind of looks like, you know, it's like a little spring dress. What do you call it? A shift or something?
It was a dress, but it had like, it has that sort of negligee vibe to it, but it was definitely
a dress.
Yeah,
because it had like a little black. Black,
yeah, like
lace.
Some black lace on the top, and it was silk. So it
But
looked,
it was still a dress.
Yeah, and I was going from that gig to another one that it was kind of like a flirty late night radio kind of thing. So it was appropriate for both.
It was adorable. Who cares? Yeah. It was adorable, and you were on stage, and you were really funny. And now it's time for Danny and Larry and Wendy to decide who's going on to the final round. And Larry King, so everybody else puts their microphone down, but Larry King, right into his microphone, says to the other two judges, "I like the little one in the 90. And the whole room just lost it. It was so funny. So funny. So anyway, Story Smash is coming back, you guys, on Sunday night, starting December 4th. It's going to be a blast. It'll be at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And of course, you guys know I'll be talking about it, and you'll see it all over my social medias as well. So just keep it in the back of your mind, guys. Story Smash, Friday nights. It's going to be fabulous. I'm super excited. All right, you guys, she's here right now, Lana Turner. She is an award-winning comedian and one of the hardest working comics out there. And I think that's absolutely true. I know that about you. You work your butt off. And when you see all those videos on your YouTube page, it really shows that, I mean, somebody's got to shoot that. Somebody's got to edit that. Somebody's got to come up with a concept. Somebody's got to get the cute clothes. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. So I'm very, very impressed.
I'm trying to learn
might know
all those
her from
skills.
Yeah, well, it's true.
Yeah.
You guys know Lana from segments on NBC, Comedy Central, Animal Planet, Netflix, and also on True TV's How to Be a Grown-Up. She's also toured for the USO. I've had a lot of comedians on Storyworthy that have toured with the USO. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, there's great stories from being overseas with the troops. So many good stories, actually.
Yeah.
That would have been
Go. I'm gonna see if I can get that gig when
I want to go.
Let's go. I'll tell Johnny Cardinale to book us both. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh my gosh, I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
I'm going to tell him. Anyway, you also, let's see here. You also have your podcast, The Perfect 10. Are you still doing Perfect 10?
No, it's still available, but I have not done that in a little while. I actually started right before COVID a new podcast. And then I have the episodes logged, but I wasn't sure what to do with it at this time. So I need to get back on it.
Yeah, but it can sit too. That's all right. And it's gotten so many good reviews. I mean, well over 1 million downloads and great reviews. And you did that with Ralphie for a while.
I did it with Ralphie, and then I did it on my own for a little while. And it's hilarious. The old episodes are super funny.
It really is. Yeah. And it's evergreen. So it's a fun show no matter what. And you also have two comedy albums, If These Lips Could Talk and Dick Jokes and Other Assorted Love Songs. And I know they've played all over the country and also on Sirius XM satellite radio. And you made your big screen debut in the award-winning indie film Teacher of the Year. I love that. You guys can find Lana over at our website, lanaturner.com, and also on Twitter at Lana Turner, L-A-H-N-A, Turner. Yes, of course. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Lana Turner.
All right. Well, here we go for my story, right?
Yeah.
The last time I was on your show, Christine, I talked about getting a cat. And so I thought it would be kind of fun to pick up from there because that was such a tough time in my life. And I did get a cat. Yay. I got a kitty cat who I love so much. And I feel very defined by having a cat because I had dogs for so many years. Love dogs too, but there's something about having a kitty. And it was defining in that it was one of those things that I got to make a decision by myself. And, it was one of the first major things I did as a single woman, not married. And I put that in quotes because I was never not married. We never finished our divorce because my husband sadly passed away. But as we've talked about already, that the last few years of my marriage were riddled with addiction and a lot of problems. And I was not treated well. And I got used to not being treated well. So the idea of somebody treating me with kindness and love and respect was extremely foreign. So getting back into the dating world was very, very scary. And I tried to date a few people. Notably, I dated an older dude, which came with the trifecta of finishing too fast, not getting hard, and passing out and falling asleep, which was really something I never really knew much about. I mean, I didn't have a great sex life through my marriage, but that was like, that was like all new territory. I was like, is this what dating's about now?
How much older was he?
Couple years.
Well, that's not that old.
Not too old, but there was definitely some ED and didn't last.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was he was just like the two pump chump, right? Like that whole thing too. So that was like, what's wrong with me? And then I dated the guy that was like the player, right? Like and the whole new world of dating online and Snapchat and pics and all these things are coming at me. I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. That was short lived. And then I dated the much younger guy, which was fun.
But how much younger?
8 years.
Yeah. My husband was 8 years younger than me.
Good.
One of mine. The other husband was 12 years older.
Oh, so you've done all that.
I have. It's just crazy. And now the guy I'm dating now is only 2 years older and I really like it.
That's good.
I do. I like.
I think it's good for a lot of reasons. Like you can relate better, but the young thing was fun, but it was short lived.
And why was that short lived?
He
didn't have ED.
No. That was a lot of fun. But
well, that's good. That's good.
But the guy that I actually started dating actually is a little bit younger, and he's super sweet. And that's just it. Like I didn't know that I was allowed to be treated well until I met this person. And I always like to think that when you make a first impression with somebody, the moment you meet them, what's the first thing you think when you meet them? And my first thought was, you are so sweet. And that hasn't wavered since I met him. And it's been over 2 years now. He's super, super sweet, which I think I deserve super, super sweet in my life. So the big striking difference, though, between starting a relationship now and so many years ago is that I have kids. And I also never believed that I always thought, oh, I'll date, I'll meet somebody, whatever, but never somebody that I would have involved with my children. And that changed with this person because when I met him, we started seeing each other and everything was going really well. And he met my kids and the kids loved him and he loved the kids.
How long but did was, you wait until he met the children?
He actually wanted to meet them pretty early on. And we were dating as friends, like nothing had progressed. And I think if he could speak for himself, he wanted to meet the kids before he pursued me any further, because what if the kids are dicks? Because there are lots of, I always, people don't just turn into dicks. Like, I know this is an awful thing to probably say, but when you meet somebody's kid and they're just an asshole as a kid, I don't think people just become, like, you don't hit puberty and now you're an asshole. Like, you can be a two-year-old and be an asshole. It's just, you're not supposed to say that, right?
Right, correct.
So I think he wanted to make sure that my kids weren't assholes, and he met them and they're such sweet kids. So he liked the kids and we became, you know, we started dating, but I wasn't willing to let down that wall. And so what we were doing initially was I would go to work, you know, I'd go do a gig. He has a regular job during the day. Then he would show up at my house around 10 o'clock or whatever when I'd get home, and then we would let the babysitter leave. And then he would hang out until, you know, like 2 or 3 in the morning. And then he would go home and we would do that again the next day.
So he didn't stay the night?
No, because right. Then he'd be there in the morning right. And then it would be awkward with the kids.
Right.
So at some point he says to me, he's like, well, why don't I just stay with your kid? Like, you're leaving to go do a gig. You're gone for 2 or 3 hours. You're paying a babysitter. Why don't I show up right around the time you're leaving? All I have to do is put your kids to bed and then I'll be here when you come home and you don't have to pay a babysitter. And I froze and I was like, because in my mind, I was like, wait a second. You hear all these stories of men who prey on women with children. And so I just froze and I looked at him and I was like, are you a creep? Like, what do you want to do with my kids? Like, what is this? And at that moment, I thought he would be, you know, most people would be defensive and walk out or, you know, what are you insinuating? He didn't do that at all. He goes, what do I need to do to make you feel more comfortable? I could put in a camera. We could, you know, what
talk
what
to
do
the
you need
kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I started thinking about it and I was like, well, I have a lot of people come stay with my kids. I don't know if any of them are creeps. When I was a child, I had a creep and my parents didn't know he was a creep. So, you know, that's a whole nother story, Tally.
Yeah.
Another episode. All these thoughts started going through my mind and I called and my kids both go to therapy because, you know,
sure.
They've had a lot of trauma. And I spoke to the therapist and they said, look, your kids are super loud and verbal. They're not the ones you need to worry about.
Yeah.
You got to worry about the little girl down the street that doesn't talk. That's the one. But your kids and they're in therapy and we're trained to see signs. So like you should feel pretty comfortable. It sounds like my therapist was literally like, and my kid's therapist both were like, it sounds like he might just be a nice guy. Have you ever thought about that?
Aww.
I was like, oh, they do exist.
Aww.
So he started coming over. I started leaving and he started hanging out with the kids. He became my kid's friends, especially my son. My son craved male companionship so much that this guy was his friend, not mommy's boyfriend. So the relationship flipped. Now August, and my boyfriend's name is Sean, sees Sean as something that he needs to protect for himself,
aww,
which was adorable. So we didn't want to step on that. So now Sean started staying over so that now he's there in the morning too. And August was super excited about it. But one day he walks in full of confidence and just manned up and puffed up. And he goes, I don't like you sleeping in my mommy's bed. So Sean goes, okay, buddy, what do you want me to do about that? And he goes, can I sleep on the couch? And August says, yeah, you can sleep on the couch. So now August would go to bed, but before he would walk downstairs, make sure that Sean was sleeping on the couch, and then walk upstairs, go to bed. And then the next morning, Sean would wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning or 4 and run downstairs and get on the couch. And then when August would wake up, first thing he would do is jump out of bed and make sure that his friend was still on the couch, because he had control over this situation.
And he's protecting you.
Well, he's protecting August's place to sleep with mommy or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but it definitely was him being the man of the house and having control. And we let him do it, which was brilliant, because after a couple of months of that, Sean went away on a business trip. And August didn't know this. And so after a couple of days, though, Sean hadn't stayed over. And so August calls him up and goes, where are you? Why haven't you come over? And Sean says, well, you know, it's not that comfortable sleeping on the couch. And August thinks about it for a minute. He goes, okay, fine. You can sleep in mommy's bed.
Oh, my gosh. Because he didn't want to lose him. That is so cute.
It's so sweet, but it gets even sweeter and a little creepy. So that whole conversation about how is Sean a creep or not, he was definitely not. But we started to think that August, because he loved Sean so much, a little creepy. Like, he kept trying to get Sean to take a bath with him. He would play horsey, but he would mount Sean and face him. There was a lot of, like, reverse, like, molestation happening in my house where my
that
son was just
so
like
funny. Well, he loves him.
He loves him.
Lana, so this is so exciting.
It was so sweet. So there's one more thing that happened that was just so sweet that kind of turned everything around, and it was super cute. So again, a few months after all of this was going on and we have this little unit going, I called Sean my boyfriend one day.
Sure.
And August stomped on my foot. And I was like, what was that for? And he goes, he's not your boyfriend. I don't like that name. And I said, oh, okay, what should I call him, buddy? And he goes, just call him your friend. I was like, okay, so he's my friend. And so we moved on with him being my friend. But then I said, well, you know, as time moved forward, I said, you know, he probably wants to have a girlfriend. And so Sean then asked August for permission to be my boyfriend. And August said no. So meanwhile, he's still staying at the house. He's had permission to sleep in my bed. And we're all like this little family moving forward, but he's not my boyfriend. And then Sean went away on another business trip. So this time August got concerned and he said, where is he? And I go, I don't know, babe, but I'm pretty sure he would like to have a girlfriend. Maybe he found a girlfriend and he's with her now. And August thought about it for a minute. And then his face sort of changed. And he looked at me and he goes, do you think she has a son?
Oh, my gosh.
He was jealous of the possibility that this man might have a girlfriend. That's not a problem. He doesn't care if he has a girlfriend. He can have a, but that she could have a boy that he
would have to compete with.
Yes.
Lana, you have to marry Sean today. That's it. You're marrying him. You guys cannot separate ever. August needs him badly. This is so cute. Yeah.
It's so cute. Well, anyway, so Sean got on the phone with him and said, look, you know, I would like to be your mom's boyfriend. And at that point, August was like, okay, fine, because he didn't want to risk losing him to another woman's son. And that's really the end of the story.
That is
because
so cute. So how's April doing with him?
She was hilarious because she's a little older. She's 13 now. At the time, she was 12. And she also didn't like the name boyfriend very much. But at some point during all of this craziness with her brother, she pulled me aside and looked at me and she said, Mom, I know he's your boyfriend. She said, and then she goes, but don't worry, I won't tell August.
Oh, that is so cute. That is so sweet. Well, I'm happy for you because that has not been the situation around my place. My daughter is at odds. You know, she just has a hard time accepting my boyfriend around. He's only sees her maybe once or like one afternoon a week. It's not a lot, but and he does sleep on the couch. But she says to me, she wrote to me a note. She wrote, hey, Mom, it's 2020. You don't need a man.
Oh.
So I've just told her that he makes me happy. What can I say?
Oh, how old is she now?
13.
13.
Same as April.
Yeah. It's an awkward age because they don't really fully grasp what you need the man for. You really don't need a man. Like, there are alternatives. And I've thought about going other ways plenty of times. And before I met this one, I definitely considered.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's adorable. But listen, I am so happy for you. You look beautiful. Your content on YouTube is incredible. I love that new song. Now, it's called Be Happy. No, wait.
You can call it whatever you want. I know, so happy, you? So fucking happy.
So fucking happy. Yeah.
I call it so happy.
Just because, so happy. Okay. I love that video. So happy. You guys look at LanaTurner.com. You'll find it over there. And of course you post stuff on Twitter as well. And Instagram probably. I haven't checked Instagram.
I do. I'm going to follow you on there so we can keep up with each other.
Oh, good. Let's do that.
We should be on there together.
So. Yeah, we should be. I miss you so much. Look, by the way, to my left is my piano as well. You've got a piano in your room.
Oh, yeah.
And there's my piano. And you know I play guitar, too.
I didn't know.
I do, yeah. We should start a band. That's it. We're doing
we
it.
We should. You want to? We should do a song together.
You're so cute.
Do you want to?
Yeah, let's do a song together. I'd love to.
I have a couple of ideas of things. Okay.
You're so adorable. I'd love to. I really would. That'd be fun. Well, listen, Lana, thank you so much. I'm super proud of you, and I'm really looking forward to the documentary because I know it's going to have heart and soul, and, you know, you're a family. You've got those kids, and it's just what Ralphie would want. I really think he'd be so happy for the kids and seeing how they're thriving and the stability and Sean, and I'm just really thrilled for all of you. I really am.
I wonder all the time, you know, does he have the ability to check in and see? And, you know, we always wonder that when we lose somebody, right?
Yeah.
If they, and I know that he would be super proud.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
he has everything to be proud of. And it's a bummer he didn't get to stick around to see it in person and in flesh. But
I know.
Yeah. He was so well loved.
I know. God, he has so many fans. He still has fans.
So many.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while, I'll be just scrolling through Twitter and you'll just see somebody will just write, "I still miss Ralphie May." You know, you'll just see that. You know, he was loved by so many people.
Well, he's got a lot more content coming out because not only, I didn't mention, but the documentary, there was a lot of footage of him on the hard drive. He was filmed for 9 months. So we have a 1-hour special that also is accompanying this. And if people want to get on his YouTube and Facebook, we're always posting videos and there's a lot of new content that nobody will have ever seen before that's going to go up. He was so prolific.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well,
a lot of content.
I hope Kat makes a bunch of money on this in some way or another because she's put a lot of work in.
Yeah, she's well compensated. I made her an unbelievable deal, and so whenever the thing sells, she'll be fine.
I'm so glad. No, but really, because you know, you put so much of your life into somebody else's story, and you want it told well. And she does have the footage, so it's her baby, as it were, in terms of
She worked hard on it.
So I'm glad that she'll hopefully get a bunch of money, and everybody will get a bunch of money, and me too.
I don't know. You know what? The funny thing is everyone thinks there's money. A documentary, we'll see. I don't know about, you know, documentaries and money.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. But I hope some money. I mean, because, well, you know, all of it.
Yeah, it would be nice. Money's always good. But I think where she benefited the most, and she is, she got an amazing contract with me because I'm very grateful to her. But she also has the professional accolade. I mean, when I hired her, she'd had a web series and hadn't done much at all. So I think she's really, I don't know, you'd have to talk to her, but I think she had an opportunity to really do something. She was at the right place. I hate to say it, at the right time. It was the terrible place for everyone involved, all the subjects, but for what she was able to capture, that was, if I'm a documentarian, I would be happy to have been where I was if I was her.
Absolutely. It's like the... Whoever started, oh no, I guess it was the Tiger King man himself. He was filming himself.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? I mean, he probably had no idea it would go as crazy as it did.
That's oh my God, that was the craziest stuff, right?
I know, doesn't that feel like 10 years ago?
I know. That's how time is moving right now through COVID.
It is, it really is. Well, listen, I'm so happy to see you, Lana. You're just fantastic. You're such a bright light. I love you so much.
I love you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're so sweet. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning into Storyworthy. Why not head over to storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list? You know, I do a good newsletter every week, and I always forget to mention it to people, but I do put a lot of time into my newsletter. And so join my goddamn list, would you? And then you'll get my newsletter, just one note a week. And I'll also be updating you guys on the shows, The Hour of Power and Story Smash, moving in December. So I'm super excited. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of Lana Turner. Thank you so much, friend.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.